This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And yesterday, Rob Capello visited our studios. Capello is a world-renowned composer and conductor and creator of the performance series What Makes It Great, where he unveils, note by note, the hidden majesty within beautiful pieces of music. But really, what makes it great is Rob Capello's passion for helping us learn and understand the difference between casually listening to music and really hearing it. We set up a keyboard, and Capello gave us a joyous masterclass, beginning with the story of what inspired him to create the What Makes It Great series.
I heard these two colleagues talking about this woman named Nadia Boulanger. She was really one of the most famous composition teachers of the 20th century. She taught Stravinsky, Copland, she taught Bernstein, she taught Gershwin, she taught Philip Glass. So I decided I would just fly myself to Paris for my first lesson with the famous Nadia Boulanger. And at the time, I was preparing for a competition, the Casadesus piano competition. So I sat down at the famous piano, you know, to play the Mozart. She hit me.
She struck me.
She actually struck me with her fist. At the time, she was supposed to be like blind and 200 years old. But you know, there's that place in your shoulder that really hurt. Right there, she hits me and she says, "Capello, this is grotesque." She says, "You play this exquisite passage as if it were this." All right, now, did you hear the difference?
Oh, gosh.
That's all right.
This is where my shame comes through.
You know, either did I. You know, I'd love to say that, you know, the scales fell from the heavens and I saw it. Thank you, mademoiselle. Went back and I was transformed. I didn't hear it either. She said Mozart would never have written. Repeating that insults the listener. Once you do this, why say it again? He goes, which is so beautiful. Then, this is really subtle, listen closely. She says, he would never have written a boring chord with only three notes. He adds one note, and that one note makes it so exquisite. So instead of that simple, boring version, he writes, and then not, but this beautiful version. I now realize the difference between listening and hearing.
But you must have played that piece hundreds, if not thousands,
of times
before.
That's what was so amazing about it. I had been hearing those notes go by for months. I was preparing for this competition. I had been hearing, but I had never really listened. Listening requires paying attention to what you're hearing in a completely new way. And really, that was the beginning of everything I did from that moment on.
Why do you think that someone like you, who loved and played music for so long before that, was never attuned, if I can use that word, to the fact that hearing was so important?
You know, I think that's the thing. We're so busy, especially as musicians, learning how to play, learning how to actually make the music happen, that we're never actually focused on the music itself. In fact, you know, let me be honest. I was 19 at the time. And, you know, to me, yes, I paid lip service to the fact that great composers are great, of course. But really, to me, they were script writers,
right,
providing material for me to take center stage. It was about me and it was about my performance. And yeah, they were great, but really it was script. I had never really been curious, and we don't focus enough on this, on how the music itself was put together. And one of the great things about that moment was suddenly I didn't care about the competition. I didn't care about how I played. Suddenly I was dazzled by Mozart's genius. And also how much difference one note or one detail can make. This is fine, but it's not this. That's the difference between good and great. And so really, at that moment, I realized if I wasn't hearing it, and as you said, I'd been playing it for months, what about the general public? What about people who are just going to concerts? You know, it's my deepest belief everyone in the world loves classical music, but almost no one has ever really heard it.
I'd love to hear another example of how you help people hear, because you do it in particular with a piece from Mendelssohn.
Mendelssohn D minor piano trio, one of the most popular pieces of chamber music ever written. The third movement starts with this absolutely beautiful piano solo. Thank you. So, what makes something like this so beautiful? You know, one of the fantastic things we learned from Boulanger is she always said, if you really want to understand a piece of music, and this is actually true when you watch films or read novels as well, at every moment, write the continuation that the composer might have done, all the choices he might have made, and then see the one he did make and be astonished by it. So that was often our assignment. She would give us like the first four measures, and we'd have to write as many different measure five, six, and sevens as we possibly could. And then when you go back to the original, it's amazing. So in these What Makes a Great programs, I frequently write what I call the bad Capello versions. Here's a bad Capello version of that opening. The first three beats are Mendelssohn. Unfortunately, the rest are Capello. This is Mendelssohn. He could have continued all single beat notes. Whack, 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 whack. But instead of doing this, and then another one, he pushes forward with faster notes. And then this exquisite sigh. I mean, that beautiful dissonance. Could have been a normal note. Would have been fine, but no one would have been sighing. No one would have been dying. But this, that beautiful sigh. Then he could have continued again with single beat notes. One, 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 one. In which case, none of them are special. But just by changing the rhythm, delay. That one little bum, bum. So beautiful. These tiny changes, the difference between good and great. That's what it's all about.
It is thrilling to sit here across from you and hear that.
Well, the great thing about this program is what we do and what makes it great is the first hour is just taking this one piece apart. You know, 27 minutes of music. Then there's an intermission, but then you hear a complete performance, but you hear it with new ears. You're on the inside of the piece, not the outside. You've taken in what we just did there for that little bit. We do for the whole piece for an hour with the musicians on stage. Then you get to hear it like a piece you own.
I adore this, but I have to wonder, you're asking people to engage through the education that you help, that you give them, their minds in terms of paying attention and understanding what they're about to hear in a more profound way. But what about, you know, the gentle pushback, which might be music, especially beautiful like music like this, ought to be something that you just feel, that you don't need to engage the analytical in order to appreciate it, that if it's there quivering in your soul, that's enough.
Well, first I would say that though I'm talking about this, in the end, I'm not asking you to engage intellectually. In other words, though I'm talking, really, all it's about is listen to this. So in a way, though I'm pointing these things out, in the end, they're things that are felt and heard. All I'm trying to do is get you to hear what's actually in front of you. And once you have it pointed out to you, you can't miss it. And it is something that you ultimately feel as opposed to hear.
We've been talking a lot about hearing classical music, but you can do this with any kind of music?
Yeah. I mean, you know, people say that music is a universal language, but the truth is it really is. How musical ideas get developed is not so different from culture to culture. So I've done everything from Gregorian chant to Javanese gamelan music to Duke Ellington to Mozart Requiem. There's only two kinds of music, great music and the other kind. And how you develop a musical idea is not so different from style to style.
So, Rob, one of the many non-classical songs that you've applied this to is Somewhere Over the Rainbow from The Wizard of Oz, of course. And since you do have the keyboard there, can you give us a little taste of how this works with a song like that?
Kansas to Oz. You know, this first note is low, down, deep in your voice. I mean, this is black and white, the arid reality of Dorothy, her troubled reality. Kansas, this is Oz, where we're trying to escape to. You know, every verse ends and you're stuck back in Kansas. No transformation. Now he comes back and he does this thing at the end and we come there. Birds fly over the rainbow. And the song should have ended here. Back in Kansas, but there would have been no transformation. Uh-huh. Then in a brilliant stroke, you know, there's a wonderful quote from Yip Harburg, who wrote the words. He says, words make you think thoughts. Music makes you feel a feeling, but a song makes you feel a thought. Yeah. And so in a brilliant stroke, he goes back and has the orchestra repeat the B section by itself. You can hear her thinking out loud. Then she comes in, just like in the middle section. If it had continued like the first time, it would have gone. But he changes. And then starts one last rise. Now remember, what's the song about? Going from Kansas to Oz. One last rise. Why? Where do we end up? We end up in Oz, and her transformation is complete. That's the story.
So hearing you, Rob, I can't help but to think, who would have known that so much joy and illumination could come from one solid punch in the shoulder?
Even in the simplest ideas. I mean, this is not a great idea. You know, it's just four notes, but it's listening for possibilities, what we could make out of it. You know, Gerard de Mistral goes hiking in the woods, Swiss engineer, comes back and has burrs stuck over to his pants. You know, most people don't pay any attention. People have been hiking for thousands of years and had burrs stuck over their pants, never paid attention. He was curious, put it under a microscope, noticed the way the threads and the loops interacted. 2 years later, invents Velcro. Now, I mean, the difference is there's someone who's listening for possibility, who's coming to his experience to engage with it, to ask questions, to talk back to his experience. It's not just a way of engaging with music. It's a way of engaging with the world in that kind of interactive way, listening for possibilities. That's what it's all about.
Well, Rob Capello is a world-renowned composer and conductor and the creator of the series What Makes It Great. He's appearing tonight with the Griffin Trio at Jordan Hall as part of the Celebrity Series of Boston. He'll be discussing Mendelssohn's Trio in D minor. There's more information about the show at radioboston.org. Rob, it has been an absolute honor and pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
It's a real pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
And since we have you in the studio with a keyboard and we're wrapping up the show, could you play us out on something?
Sure. So why don't we finish with the first piece from Schumann's Kinderszenen.
Listening for possibility, that is officially the motto of this show. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a great weekend. Join us again Monday for more Radio Boston.